Welcome back in. Hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Liam texting in. Derrick Henry is amazing, and we are all heartbroken. Well, we're about to find out two things. One, how good the coaching staff is, and two, how important the running back position is in the modern NFL. Is someone who is 75% of what Henry is still good enough to win lots of games? The fact that Henry makes only about a third of what Tannehill does says maybe so. This is coming from Liam on the text line.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, look, you have to be able to adjust. I absolutely believe this, and I think it's one of those things that is an argument against Henry being MVP. I mean, it just has to be, but I think if you took a whole season of Logan Woodside at quarterback with Derrick Henry, and you had a whole season of Ryan Tannehill at quarterback with someone other than Derrick Henry, I think the team with Ryan Tannehill at quarterback has a better record than the other team. I feel pretty strong about that. How much better?
You're really selling Logan Woodside short.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I am. Maybe we'll find out that I am. But we don't, you know, we don't know much about him. I think he's done a really nice job, you know, earning that. They keep bringing people in. He beats them out, so good for him. But it's, you know, it's a good starting quarterback, and we're talking a really good starting quarterback in this league. It's still the most important thing to have. And as we talked about yesterday, Derrick Henry's numbers, like the real incredible run that he's on, save for the end of the 18 season, coincides with Ryan Tannehill becoming the quarterback.
Yep.
You know, they go hand in hand. So we are going to find out about Tannehill too, because now it's going to be tougher in some ways for him. I don't know that we're going to see anything, though, where I'm going to say, yeah, you know what? Derrick Henry doesn't matter that much.
No.
See, any running back is just fine. They might win all these games, and I still won't think that, because we've seen what he does. We've seen how many games he's won, how many games he's turned around with a big play, or how many games he's just battered an opponent in the fourth quarter, and that's the biggest reason they won the game. That's already happened.
Yeah, I mean, it has, and it's one of those things where, you know, we had John Glennon from SI.com on yesterday, and I think he brings up a really good point. You know, locally, most people here have pretty good confidence in Ryan Tannehill and the way he's played. Nationally, we've talked about a lot here on this show. I mean, he's been, and often, in many cases, overlooked, disrespected may be the proper term when it comes to Ryan Tannehill. And with no Derrick Henry, if the Titans continue to win games, this is an opportunity, I think, in a way where you can't just look around and say, well, yeah, you're turning the ball or turn around and hand the ball off to Derrick Henry all the time. If the Titans continue to win games and Tannehill is playing well, I would hope that even nationally that perception of him starts to change a little bit, because you no longer have the excuse of, yeah, you have this, you know, monster in the backfield you turn around and hand the ball off to. I guess unless Adrian Peterson comes in and, you know, puts up 120 a game.
I was going to say, Tannehill lights up the Rams Sunday night. Yeah, but Dante Foreman gives him that play action.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
This is, again, it's not the opportunity you want for Ryan Tannehill. You want to be part of the healthy and great offense, and then people can say whatever they want and win games. But when it comes to the media side of things and the fan and just the NFL discussion, Sunday night is a huge opportunity for Ryan Tannehill. To earn some respect from people who I think have absolutely disrespected and overlooked him. Because if he plays well and wins, or even plays well in a competitive loss, I would hope some people would notice that and see that, you know, he's kind of been a decent part of all this too.
Marco from Nashville texting in, can we start referring to number two simply as our number two until he gives us a reason to believe he's still Julio?
I don't know what that question means. Two.
Yeah, I mean, he's number two.
Yeah. I guess you could say he was the number one receiver in that win at Seattle.
Yes.
But other than that, yeah. He's he's going one way, and A.J. Brown's going the other way.
Ben on the text line, Ryan having to do more now might get him hurt because he will run more and hold on to the ball more. I don't know if I necessarily buy that Tannehill is just all of a sudden going to be running more with Derrick Henry not in there. Now, I will say the most unstoppable play in football, which is the shotgun fake dive to Derrick Henry, RPO, that worked a few times on Sunday. I don't know how successful that's going to be without Derrick Henry, but who knows? Maybe it's still something you can go to.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't think you're going to quite get the same reaction to that play.
I don't think so either. Where all 11 guys on the defense collapse.
Until or unless these guys go nuts. But, yeah, Tannehill running more. I mean, for the most part, you've got that play and you got scrambles on pass plays.
Yeah.
They're not gonna start running QB power all of a sudden all over the place to manufacture a run game.
That is an interesting question, though. I mean, one thing that will be interesting to watch starting this week against, albeit a different challenge in the Rams' defense, I mean, you have Von Miller coming in. You have the best defensive player in the NFL in Aaron Donald. And, by the way, Jalen Ramsey in the secondary as well. So this is a unique challenge defensively for the Titans that they're going up against this offense. But how does your game plan change if you're Todd Downing? I mean, you've been running a system. This is the way that you've operated, not only this year, but really the last few years with Derrick Henry operating at the level that he's been playing at. How much does your play calling, your system change without having him in there? That's going to be really interesting to watch.
Yeah, and I look at these, and I asked this of Tony Dews yesterday, and, you know, he didn't give like a ton on this, but I think kind of confirmed the idea that, like, these acquisitions sort of say we want to do the same thing. These, you know, it's not that, like, if you got a different kind of back, you wouldn't, I mean, you'd still have this, like, you'd still call the same running plays. But I feel like they're trying to replicate what they do as much as possible. You know, but if you have Julio Jones, then I think even if you had Derrick Henry and then you get Julio Jones back full-time, I think that could even change the offense some too and your game plan a particular week. But now you're just a little bit maybe more forced to think in those terms. I mean, gosh, the first down run now is like a changeup, you know?
Yeah.
now it's like, well, are they going to hand off? And who? And who is in the backfield right now? I mean, it's very different. And certainly – I mean, I don't think there's any question defenses are going to align differently against them now.
Can't wait for the Deontay Foreman wheel route coming up on Sunday. It's going to be awesome.
That's been waiting on the Derrick Henry wheel route, and I guess I'll have to wait for till January or next fall.
Guess so. Join Stars for this year's Cherish the Night Unplugged event tonight at Marathon Music Works. This year's lineup is awesome, featuring Gordon Kennedy, Charles Esten, and Danny Flowers with a special presentation of the Troy Gentry Compassion Award to the Young Fables. To learn more and to register, go to starsnashville.org. When we come back, we will switch gears. The first college football playoff rankings came out yesterday, and why I had one takeaway that tells me one team's fate is pretty much already sealed at this point. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex. Join us in partnering with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's Light the Night. Light the Night brings light to the darkness of cancer through hope, research, and support for patients and their families. Through this inspirational nationwide movement, we raise awareness and funding for groundbreaking research and treatment options to eliminate cancer. Nashville's Light the Night will be virtual and take place tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Learn more at lightthenight.org/TN. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Twitch, on Twitter, and YouTube today and every day. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, conveniently serving Middle Tennessee with 13 locations. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Joe Rex Road, the first college football playoff rankings come out last night, and some surprises really across the board. Number one is Georgia. That was the least surprising thing of the whole night. At number two, Alabama, even with a loss. Alabama coming in at number two. Michigan State at three. Oregon at number four, which means that no Cincinnati in the top four, no Oklahoma in the top four. Oklahoma ranked eighth on the college football playoff committee's list last night, which I must admit, I found to be pretty funny. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, like that was the one thing I was like, good for you, committee. I think Herb Street was like, I'd like to applaud the committee.
Yes, because if you've watched them play this year, it's not been great from Oklahoma. Now, having said that, they're 9-0. So,
well, yeah.
There is that.
And that's the thing. So, in one sense, there's some consistency in terms of, like, clearly, like, quote-unquote eyeball test and how you're playing and how you look and the underlying numbers, all that stuff matters.
Yeah.
Because Wake Forest also undefeated and a Power 5 team. And
number nine.
Yeah, number nine. But, I mean, the Cincinnati thing is just so stupid. It's just so ridiculous. I mean, they won at Notre Dame. And you know, Gary Barta's out here talking about, well, you know, but what else have they done? Again, go through any of these teams. Michigan State has one impressive win. They just got it at home against Michigan. Other than that, eh, okay. I mean, you got Minnesota ranked in here with you got some of these power and no UTSA, which is undefeated, which beat Illinois, a Big Ten team on the road, which beat Memphis. It is the Power Five Invitational, and the eyeball test really is just what it says on your jersey.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
Well, you know, Cincinnati coming in at 6 last night, so Ohio State is number 5, Oregon at 4. What this tells me, and I know it's the first ranking, and a lot of things can happen, but last night told me, like, Cincinnati's not getting in. Like, you've gotten to the point now where the part of your schedule that supposedly is the most impressive for Cincinnati has already taken place. So, to me, like, I don't know what they can do moving forward here to kind of elevate themselves unless, you know, people in front of them just fall apart. But, you know, I'm looking at the schedule right now. Like, if Oklahoma ends up running the table, I mean, they're probably going to move ahead of Cincinnati. You've got Michigan State. Alabama's in there, which that sets up an interesting situation now for the 1-2. Like, if Alabama loses to Georgia in the SEC title game, they got two losses. I mean, they can't be in the college football playoff, can they?
I mean, I don't think so.
But apparently they
I mean, if it says, if the eyeball test says it, look, it says Alabama, then you can just do whatever. You can go lose a game and you're still number two.
Yeah.
I mean, look.
What is Alabama's best win so far? Probably Ole Miss, right? I mean, Florida looked like a good win at the time. Florida's not good.
Yeah, and that's another hard part about the good win because, like, at the time, is it better than it looks later? You know what I mean? I mean, like, would Oregon beat Ohio State right now? Probably not, but they beat them.
Yeah.
They got the win. But, like, Cincinnati, I don't know. I think that's it's those two. They don't have anything. They haven't done anything that special. I mean, Cincinnati went to Notre Dame, which comes in number 10, has lost one game only to Cincinnati, beat them by double digits. So then they got credit for that, supposedly, but then, you know, they haven't played as well. They haven't been as impressive, you know, in the last. Okay. Well, Oregon lost to 3-5 Stanford. So,
and they're in the top four.
What's less impressive? Like, does losing and winning, did those things, the results matter, or just like how you kind of look, or again, just sort of what we think you are? What we think you are, go back to, was it the first year, first or second year, when it was like Mississippi State and Ole Miss, it was all this like these SEC, you know, and it was like SEC teams have these great records, and so they're all, but it's like, but who, did any of them ever beat anyone at that point in that particular year? They hadn't really beaten anybody in the non-league.
Right.
So you're just assuming that because it's the, and then, you know, they've totally faded at the end anyway, but it's like it's a lot of just assumptions about what teams are. And what hurts from that perspective is like Cincinnati, I thought, kind of proved something last year, didn't they?
Yeah.
I mean, this particular Cincinnati team, like this just tells you, like, there's no chance while there's four teams, no chance that a group of five teams is going to get in there. Because they just, like, you can't, there aren't enough good games on a schedule.
Yeah.
And nobody else here in this entire thing has done – how many teams have had more than one impressive win, like really impressive win? Cincinnati has one. Michigan State has one. Alabama has one. I mean, a couple that are pretty good. Yeah. Who's killing it on their schedule? What's Ohio State done? They've lost to Oregon. What's their best win? They beat Penn State the other night
yeah.
at home. pretty
I mean,
good.
For that matter, you know, Georgia's a different animal because I think you can watch Georgia and, like, you can just see how good they are.
And at least defense, they haven't lost.
Yeah, and they haven't lost, and their defense is suffocating. But, like, I mean, Georgia's best win so far is what? Kentucky? Like, everybody thought it was going to be Clemson, and Clemson's not very good.
Blowing the doors off Florida?
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah. It's just.
Look, I mean, nobody has any problem with Georgia being in the top four. But no. I'm just saying, like, to your point about the schedule, there's not really anybody out there that just has this really impressive resume in terms of their quality of competition so far.
Right. Like, if you're totally dominant, undefeated like Georgia is, then, yeah, no one had any doubt that they would be number one. And I don't think that should be criticized.
No.
But, I mean, Cincinnati should be in the top four. And this is confirmation that you're right. They will not make it. The only way they make it is with a lot of help, which, I mean, they could get that help. It's possible. Like, Oregon could stumble again. I mean, Michigan State's got losses ahead, I believe. You know, can the Big Ten – you got to hope the Big Ten kind of – that they sort of beat up on each other a little bit there, right? But, like, yeah. What if Alabama goes and loses a close game to Georgia in the SEC title game? They're a two-loss team.
Like, they shouldn't be in.
They shouldn't be in, but I'm not 100% convinced that they won't be.
I know. Now, the nightmare scenario for everybody else here is Alabama beats Georgia in the SEC title game, and those two are definitely in, and they're probably 1-2, would be my guess. And then you've got, you know, Michigan State is interesting. I don't have a problem with Michigan State being in there right now because they are 8-0 and undefeated in the Big Ten. I don't think Michigan State's going to be undefeated when all this thing gets said and done.
No.
And Ohio State's probably going to find their way back in there, would be my guess. But that's the other interesting part. So let's say Ohio State runs the table and they finish as the Big Ten champion. They're 12-1 or whatever they'd be at that point. And let's say Oregon runs the table. Is Oregon getting in over Ohio State in terms of that spot? Or how do you view that? Because to me, you know, you're obviously they value the head-to-head win over Ohio State, but to your point, Oregon did lose to Stanford. So that's got to count for something. And right now, it just feels like that loss doesn't count for anything.
Well, Ohio State has number 3 Michigan State and number 7 Michigan ahead. And, you know, who knows in the Big Ten title game? I think it absolutely will be Ohio State over Oregon. And, you know, look, that one, and that there will be screams from Eugene, and I get it. I mean, some of the justification for that is you beat a team that's completely different now than the team that they were when you beat them, because that's how things go in college football. Teams change tremendously. So I think it's clear-cut what would happen there. And the Pac-12.
You, like, think it's clear-cut for the committee what would happen there?
Well, I mean, I think, but yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly.
I mean, this has got to be a pretty depressing day if you're, you know, Luke Fickell. You're like, all right, we're undefeated. We went on the road to Notre Dame, gave them their only loss of the year. They're the number 10 team in the college football playoff ranking. Like, what else do you have to do? Now, look, I get it. And there's the argument of, all right, line Cincinnati up against Alabama. Who do you think is going to win? Alabama's probably going to win.
Line Michigan State up against them.
I agree.
In fact, I think this year, line Ohio State up against them, and I think they get smoked.
I agree.
I mean, these playoff games are blowouts all the time. Bring in the brand name program of your choice, Notre Dame. They'll get smoked too. They can go get blown out just like Cincinnati can.
That's what I'm saying. Like, but on the field, like, at some point, what you do on the field has to matter, right?
I would hope so.
But apparently it doesn't.
Like, they have taken, like, actually winning and losing games and made it as meaningless as you could possibly do for the sport that says the regular season means the most of any other sport.
Yeah.
The regular season, so looking good and having a great brand name on your jersey means the most, apparently.
Apparently so. Tough news for Cincinnati last night. I feel for Ryan Porth. Chris on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, asked if we could get Porth on the phone for this segment. It's probably in mourning.
I mean, if he wants to call in and scream, I'm not opposed to it.
Yeah, go right ahead.
You know our number, Porth.
Don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show live from Corner Pub in Brentwood this Sunday. The NFL pregame show features Jared Stillman, Mark Howard, and former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders. Join them from 5 to 7 p.m. live at the Corner Pub in Brentwood at 710 Old Hickory Boulevard prior to the Titans taking on the L.A. Rams. The NFL pregame show brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parma Tractor and Equipment, FreedomTireGuys.com, FanDuel, E2 Roofing, Hillside Medical, Social Furniture, and Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. We'll be right back and discuss the Tennessee and Kentucky game coming up. A big matchup for the Vols coming up on Saturday. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Remember FDIC, Equal Housing Lender? I was informed yesterday this is the Kentucky football fight song. And like I said yesterday to Michelle, sorry, I just hadn't heard it a whole lot in the Tennessee-Kentucky games.
I've never heard Tennessee's.
Wow. Wow. Just a dig.
Like, if we took all the fight songs and, you know, in college, like...
Is that the most common one?
Well, I mean, they're like a couple notes different. You know, like,
beautiful.
Change a couple notes, and it's like basically just, you know, put a different name on it. But there's always some story like, ah, yes, you know, Jebediah. It's always like Jebediah.
What?
I mean. You know, Jenkins wrote this song, you know, in 1833 or whatever. You know.
Yeah.
It's always basically the same song.
Great song. Going to be hearing a lot of that in Lexington on Saturday.
Oh, here comes the trash talk.
Rob.
Hey, we'll see.
Here comes the trash talk.
That nice blue
stadium. To be fair, they don't have, like, when the team's at home, they don't have to score to play the fight
song. Yeah, they play it all the time.
To absolute death anyway.
Okay,
right?
Joe. Whose side are you on, Joe?
I'm Switzerland on this, but.
Joe put his hands up. Hands up.
I was at a college football game last Saturday and, you know, not too far from the band, so you really get a feel for how often that damn song is just beaten to
going
death.
Over and over.
No matter
again.
What's happening in a game.
Just ringing in your ears after the game, too.
Before we get to the Tennessee and Kentucky matchup, I do want to point out Jim Wyatt on Twitter saying that Titans kicker Randy Bullock named the AFC Special Teams Player of the Week. So my favorite Titan of all time, Randy Bullock, being recognized for his efforts, AFC Special Teams Player of the Week. We'll have Jim Wyatt coming up at 8 o'clock to talk more about it.
Nice. Yeah, Randy Bullock's, man, talk about a chill dude. I don't know if you saw, did you see like the post-game thing, the Titans tweet out with Vrabel?
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, Randy Bullock, you know, you got a home here. Bullock's just like, all right. Anybody seen my other sock?
Vrabel said something about his, like, sky miles or something.
Yeah.
He was like, you're finally here, Randy. And he's like, thanks.
Thank you, coach.
Okay, bro.
Isn't that the kind of personality you want, though, out of your kicker, though? Nothing gets to him?
He is very chill. Yeah. Showing up at those pressers. You know, just, yep, made the kick. All right. Thank you. Guys good? Okay, bye.
So some good news for Tennessee as they head into this matchup against Kentucky. Offensive coordinator Alex Golish saying the running backs, the offensive line, quote, back to healthy for the game against Kentucky, which tells me the Mays brothers, Tyon Evans, Jabari Small, everybody's ready to go for this game against Kentucky, unless we're being lied to by Alex Golish.
That'd be pretty good. That bodes well for Tennessee, maybe not so well for Kentucky. And really, that could make for a nice run down the stretch here for the Vols if they can keep those guys healthy.
Keyword, could.
Could. I'm just saying. Tennessee, I mean, Tennessee's, that's a good offense with those guys, you know. I understand Kroger Field is. You know,
madhouse.
Yeah, you don't want to get into the checkout line there, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Pick up on aisle six.
Yeah, that's right.
Better do your online shopping there. Don't want to get in that house.
Yeah,
that's right.
At deli, they'll, I don't know, I'll make some deli joke.
Is that the least intimidating name in all of sports, going to Kroger Field? I don't know why that I make fun of it so much, but it's like, okay.
I mean, it's, it's one name. It's the ones that are like multi-name.
Oh, yeah.
Naming, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I can't think of them, but I know that there are some hilarious ones.
It used to be Commonwealth Stadium. Like, that is
just. Yeah, that sounds good.
Great.
Again, Kroger, if I was a Kentucky fan, I'd say, yeah, that's named after Jebediah Kroger.
Yes.
You know, he founded the university in 1872.
Look, I'm sure that Kentucky, it's been a very financially beneficial situation for them to have Kroger as the sponsor of their field.
Yeah.
Sure,
well,
it has been.
So I want to say that Rivals.com reported yesterday that Vanderbilt's putting that up, possibly, as a naming rights for Vanderbilt Stadium. So
Kroger would be?
No.
I was about to say.
That's
the Kroger takeover in the SEC? What's going on?
It's going to be Kroger. It just means more at Kroger and in the SEC.
Yes.
No, that it could be up for bid. That there could be naming rights. So that what could that be? I wonder who could that be? What Nashville based? Like, what would make the most sense there?
Publix.
I don't know.
Someone made a joke on Twitter, and I apologize because I forgot who it was. It was like some Tennessee, you know, like a one of Tennessee's billionaires should like name it like Neyland West, you know, Neyland West Stadium, you know.
Oh man.
Publix, Publix has got to get in there somewhere, right? Or have they not already? I have no idea.
So let's say that Tennessee wins this game, just for the sake of this discussion, not to have Michelle freak out over there.
Already freaking out.
The difference in your mind of a 7-5 season for Josh Heupel and a 6-6 season for Josh Heupel. It doesn't sound like a whole lot. Doesn't sound like a whole lot of difference. Is it? Can it be when it comes to recruiting, when it comes to momentum with this program? If I would have told you before the season that Tennessee was going to go 7-5 this year in Josh Heupel's first season, given everything we know that's happened with this team off the field, with the coaching change, with the state of the program, all that involved, what would 7-5 mean for this program? You know I'm putting the cart before the horse of a loss to Georgia, which I think is pretty likely, and it wins against South Alabama and Vandy, but a 7-5 season, what would that mean for the Vols?
Yeah, I mean, this is the last Tennessee game of the season that you don't feel like you have a strong feel for the outcome. I think it's significant, especially just because it would be a win against Kentucky. I think more than the 7-5 or 6-6, it would be the win at Kentucky because you are directly competing with them for recruits. You've got to, to me, that would be quite a statement to go into their place in what's still a great year. I mean, the loss of Mississippi State takes some luster off their season, but it's still been a very good season. Talking about a ranked team and you just lost a couple players that you really want. And again, first year for Tennessee staff, so you're going to come right in and step into some recruiting losses because you haven't been putting in the time. How could you have been? But still, for pretty much the history of this program, like you could count on like Kentucky's not coming here getting anybody we want, right? If you're the Vols, so that's where I think it's more important is who you would beat rather than. I mean, what's the bowl game difference? I'm actually trying to look right now. Like, what is Tennessee looking at from a bowl outcome here?
Probably not a huge difference.
I mean, so basically they're going to be in the – like, if they could have gotten the Ole Miss win and this win, then I think you're possibly talking Florida.
Outback Bowl?
Something like that, right. Instead, it's what, Liberty or Music City, right?
Probably.
Range, so – so I don't know if that affects that at all. But, yeah, just beating Kentucky to me, that's the key.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be a big deal. And to your point, I mean, they are directly competing with them for recruits. I mean, I know Tennessee fans want to think about the Alabamas and the Georgias and the Floridas of the world that you're competing with. And, you know, Florida, kind of an interesting situation going on right there with Dan Mullen. But there's a building process you're going to have to get back up to that point. And Kentucky, I mean, Mark Stoops, I mean, we've talked about it. He deserves a lot of credit for what he's been able to do. The stability of the program, but number one. But number two, he is going into Tennessee and into Ohio, and in some cases down into Georgia and getting recruits and bringing them to Kentucky, which if you've paid attention to Kentucky football over the year, that just doesn't happen. So Mark Stoops deserves like a lot of credit for that.
Exactly.
Now, can they finish it off? I mean, they've had all this momentum. They're the great start to the season and some big wins against Florida, and they destroyed LSU and all these different things. And then you come out and you lay an egg against Mississippi State, who, again, I guess we're not talking enough about Mississippi State and what Mike Leach has been able to do there. But can you finish this off? Because if you end up losing to Georgia and then losing to Mississippi State and then losing to Tennessee this week, if you're Kentucky, all of a sudden that momentum that you've generated starts to go the other way.
Yeah. I mean, they've got it to where, frankly, I wouldn't have guessed it could get. But there's still, I mean, if they really want to, like, get to Atlanta someday, it's just hard. It's hard right now for anyone to think that way just because Georgia's so far beyond everybody. But yeah. Things change. I mean, 5 years ago, I would say Tennessee had the more talented team than Georgia. You know, I mean, things can change. It seems far off, But yeah, if you're Kentucky, you're still fighting like the lack of history, and you're still fighting the lack of facilities compared to some teams. So you need to take advantage when you have good teams, and keep building that momentum. So, but for Tennessee, I mean, you're about a month out from signing day, and honestly, it's not going great.
No,
right now, you know. So would a win like this turn some heads? It's certainly a lot better than losing this game.
Play silly underdog picks today. Pick three football underdog teams you think will win this week for a chance to win tickets to an upcoming sporting event or concert. Go to thegamenational.com for more details and to play. Silly underdog picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. When we come back, it is time for The Choice Is Yours. Myself, Robbie Stanley, back in the questions chair this week. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it is that time of the week. Time for The Choice Is Yours here on Robbie and Rex Road. We throw out different topics both in sports and in life, and then have a little fun on how we would respond to said topics. Taking your thoughts, as always, on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. I, Robbie Stanley, back in the questions chair this week. Joe Rex Road, Michelle Gnezvik, I ask you, would you like to begin with sports or non-sports?
Let's do non-sports.
Non-sports. This is a very open-ended question. Your ideal breakfast. You can have a breakfast, including any food, whatever you want for breakfast, one day. What do you want? What's your ideal breakfast?
I mean, is there any answer you'll accept other than just say Cracker Barrel?
I will accept anything, yes. Okay. Although that's pretty good
just,
on the list.
Just the entire menu
at Cracker Barrel? The whole thing.
Okay. Actually, I have this. I got this directly in mind. First of all, it is a Greek omelet.
Okay.
So you're talking like an omelet, and you can't find this a lot of places, but an omelet with feta, with the lamb, the gyro meat.
Oh, yeah.
All this stuff in it. And
that sounds great.
And for me, it also has olives in it. I know some people are already going, uh-oh.
But olives are mutant grapes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now we're getting off the rails.
So that would be part of it. And then it would also be, you know, really good coffee. But a huge part of it would also be next to the omelet is some really good, really hardcore corned beef hash.
There you go.
Got to have the corned beef hash. And honestly, if you're just going to blow it out for breakfast, you know, some fruit, maybe a little pancakes or something too, but sausage gravy on biscuits. I mean, I may as well just go nuts.
Yeah. That's what we're going for here.
There you go.
Joe, mine's a spread as well. Large coffee, first off. That's okay. Like first. I learned from my grandpa. He used to have like a tray in the morning, and he would bring it out, and he would just sit and eat his breakfast. So this is where I've gotten my, you know, spread of breakfast. I want scrambled eggs. I want bacon. I want avocado toast. Little fruit cup. Some Special K cereal.
Okay.
And some hash browns with ketchup on the side.
Nice.
That's good.
I'm hungry. Did any of us have breakfast yet?
No. I know. Seriously. throw bacon in too, of course. Gotta have bacon.
Of course.
I mean, bacon should be with like any lunch, dinner, breakfast, whatever you want.
Yeah. Oh, also orange juice. Cup of orange juice.
There you go. Nice. I was going to lead off with the orange juice too. Give me some OJ in there. I mean, biscuits and gravy. Pretty much a given with Robbie Stanley. Probably multiple biscuits and multiple things of gravy. Just where I go. Michelle, are you shaking your head at biscuits and gravy?
See, I have had them like once in my life. I've also never had corned beef hash.
What are we doing?
New York?
What?
Like, it was a foreign concept when I went to Kentucky. I was like, what do you mean you put gravy on your biscuits? It's just not a thing.
How did you survive in the North for as long as you did, Rex Road?
I mean, I promise you, this is not
zero taste.
This is not a North thing.
I mean, you can get it, I'm sure, but it's just not.
Corned beef hashes, that's not a Southern thing, is it? I've never thought of it as that. And so, I guess sausage gravy would be a little bit more of a Southern thing. But
sausage gravy, yes, but gravy in general.
I mean, I've been drowning in sausage gravy my entire life.
Well, I'm starting there. Give me a stack. You know, I struggle as the balance between the waffle or the pancake. I'm going to give the slight edge to the pancake. Give me a stack of pancakes with some syrup on there. Are you shaking your head at pancakes too?
Waffles are elite, Robbie.
No, waffles are great. I'm giving the slight edge to pancakes.
I think I want to switch to waffles, but go ahead, keep going.
That's fine. And then give me about 19 scrambled eggs with cheese. Love me some scrambled eggs and cheese.
I'm an idiot, by the way. I want to change my answer.
Okay.
Like, how I could have this and not say the very simple answer. This is something that my family's obsessed with. Phyllis Pratt's French toast. That, or that at least has to be part of it. That's my grandma. She's 93. She lives in, we go down there in Caroline, and I have actually done it with her. You have to have slightly stale bread is one of the things. But there's also stuff she does, like it's Crisco.
Okay.
It's the most ridiculously awesome. It's better than any pancake or waffle you'll ever have. So, yes, Phyllis's French toast also, at least part of it, if not the whole thing.
All right. Dan in Greenbrier on our text line, driven by Wilson County people, or Wilson County people, WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I was giving a shout out to the people of Greenbrier. Shout out.
Shout out, Greenbrier.
That's the best omelet of all time, Joe. This is coming from Dan in Greenbrier.
You don't find it, I mean, very rarely. You know, you see the farmer's omelet everywhere and you see different kinds, but you don't see that one a ton.
Yeah.
When you get it, you got to jump on it.
All right, switching to sports. The Atlanta Braves win the World Series last night. A long-suffering Atlanta sports fan base that has been without a title since 95 in the Big Four sports. What fan base in sports would you most like to see win a title? Any sport, any fan base. What fan base, what long-suffering fan base in sports would you be the most willing to see win a title? I think I know where you're going, but I'm interested to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of them would probably die. They'd, like, jump off something. But, yeah, I'm going with my poor, suffering Lions fans. I mean, I can't even imagine.
Do you think they'd even know how to react?
I mean, you talk about, like, the loyalty and fan base that horrific joke of a franchise has through all this stuff is remarkable. Those people deserve better. That's an easy one for me. That's a slam dunk.
I knew you would probably go with the Lions.
I feel like I honestly would have to say the Lions too, only because, sorry, Joe. I mean, you've already said this. They are like the worst.
Oh, it's bad.
Team. Like, I feel like far worse than any other franchise in sports, like known. So I just think Detroit would actually burn to the ground.
That's possible.
And I would love to be there to see it.
That is possible.
It'd be pretty incredible.
Like the Browns they've sort of been kind of, right?
Yeah.
But now the Browns have actually found some competence. So,
mine's definitely not the Detroit Lions. I can tell you that. I enjoy them just where they are.
You like that. At the moment. You like that.
I do like that. I enjoy them just where they are. Mine's a different answer. Not because I enjoy this team, but I would love to see the reaction if they win the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's been so long since they've won. And they get put out in the playoffs in the first round every year. Everybody hates the Toronto Maple Leafs because the attention they get. I would just want to see the general hockey fan base's reaction to Toronto winning a Stanley Cup.
Wouldn't it just be awesome. Totally insufferable, though,
coming out of Toronto? It would be, but like the parade down there would be...
Yeah. It'd be a national holiday.
I mean, think about Vancouver losing the cup and like lighting cars on fire and riots in the streets. Multiply that by like three.
Yeah.
Could get violent.
That's a good one. That is a good one. Obviously, the Cubs would have been the answer a few years ago, but
they've had
and even
fun.
The Red Sox. Although, my gosh, so we're talking what 17 years since that, and that seems like yesterday.
I know.
Great. Thanks a lot.
All right, a coach from a movie to coach your team in real life. You can pick one coach from a movie. Which coach would you select? I have a couple different options.
Okay, so in other words, the character.
The character. Yes.
So not
the real life person.
Not like Herb Brooks. You know,
the actual coach.
Yeah,
no.
From the okay.
But you could do Kurt Russell.
So a coach, and so it can't be a real person. So because I'm thinking, remember the Titans. You can't have
it. Can be a real person. It just I'm talking the movie character. So like if you know, Herb Brooks is a real person, but you could pick Kurt Russell if you wanted to.
Okay, so you could pick the Kurt Russell version.
Yeah, the Kurt Russell version. That's what I'm going for.
Well then I think I know this is one where I'm going to forget. Something, right?
Yeah.
But I'm going to go with Denzel Washington's rendition of Coach Herm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Pretty good.
That's a heck of a leader right there, Herman Boone, real life guy, and of course in Alexandria, Virginia, T.C. Williams. But yeah, I'll go with Denzel.
That's a good selection, Michelle.
Are we coaching to win or just to like enjoy ourselves?
Whatever you want.
The guy from Little Giants, the dweeb coach.
Oh, nah. Rick Moranis.
His name? Yes.
The little dweeb. Poor Rick Moranis.
Rick Moranis.
That used to be my favorite movie ever because there was a girl on the football team.
Yeah, Icebox.
Yes, exactly. And I was like, this is so cool. And I literally couldn't think of it for a second, the movie title. And then I was like, oh, Little Giants, there we go. Yeah, that would be so much fun. His little car he drives. Like, talk about that being your coach.
There's two for me that came to mind immediately. Obviously, the first one was Kurt Russell, Herb Brooks. My favorite movie of all time. But I don't think I'm going with that. Give me Coach Carter. Samuel L. Jackson, Coach Carter.
There you love go.
It. Oh, that's a great one.
Oh, yeah. He would be my coach. Love me some Samuel L. Jackson.
Intense, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Talk about bringing the best out of your team.
That's right.
Give me Samuel L. in there.
I like it.
All right. Real quickly. Championship that is the most satisfying to win in pro sports. You got the cup in hockey, which people say is the hardest. Obviously, the NFL. It's a one-game playoff every time. 162 games in the baseball season. It's a grind to get there. And then I feel like from an individual legacy standpoint, basketball championships mean the most. Like, I feel like if you're talking about all-time greats, basketball championships mean the most in terms of what that means to your personal legacy. So you can take it any way you want to take it. Championship that is the most satisfying to win.
I mean, my answer would be the Stanley Cup.
Okay.
And I think the Super Bowl would be the other option because the Super Bowl, the entire world watches the Super Bowl. So there's something more to a Super Bowl than the sport, than the niche of like the people who follow the sport. Like everyone knows what happened in the Super Bowl, even if you never, ever watch a second of football, right?
Yeah.
You watch the Super Bowl. But I'm going to go with Stanley Cup. I think it has to be the most satisfying because it's the most grueling. You think about hockey is not that much less violent or collision-based than football, but they play seven-game series against each other. So to me, it's the most difficult to get all the way to the end healthy enough to even field a team. And so that's a big part of why I would say the most satisfying. Plus, I think the cup itself is the best trophy in sports.
Oh, by far.
Like, you got the cup and you inscribe your name. I mean, that's no one else has that.
Michelle?
No, the cup is sick. They definitely have the best trophy. I'm going to go, though, with the Super Bowl.
Okay.
I mean, for me, I just think it's one game, you know, and you don't have a chance to redeem yourself at all. You know, it's not a series. Obviously, there's a series
that
in
is true.
Baseball, basketball, hockey. And I think just the fact that it is the one game, it's like do or die. You either win or you don't. You know what I mean? You don't have a comeback. So I'm going to go with the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm going Cup. I'm going Stanley Cup. I'd win any one of them. Just give me any of them, but I'd go Stanley Cup. I'd rank the World Series last. So no disrespect to Braves.
No disrespect to the Braves, no Robbie. Come on.
You're just the next day, and you're just downgrading the Braves.
The next day, he's sorry. Like, so I wonder if they can win again. And, yeah, the World Series, yeah, that's the worst.
Yeah, it's whatever. You know, won the World Series.
I didn't say it was whatever. I just said I would put it forth.
You would still love to win one, though.
I would love to win a World Series. There's no question about it.
That is a good trophy, too.
It is. Great trophy. That is this edition of The Choice is Yours. You can yell at me on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. When we come back, we'll be joined by Jim Wyatt from TennesseeTitans.com. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.